Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Bo Shlishi, the third Aliyah in Parshas Bo. This Aliyah is only a 9 psukim, not running from Perek Yud Pasuk Chavdala to Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Gimel. The topic of our Aliyah is the last negotiation. We'll also take a moment to look at the pattern of the plagues. So now Pharaoh calls Moshe in, and he says to him, go and serve Hashem, but you just need to leave your livestock, Tzonachem Ubekarchem Yutzag. You can take your children this time. So the negotiation sort of shifts as Moshe's displayed more power. Then Paro's willing to give a little bit more. So Moshe says, well, you know, we're going to be serving Hashem and we're going to be giving sacrifices. So we're going to actually need your livestock. Not only will we take ours, but we're going to be taking yours as well. And because when we get there, we don't know specifically what Hashem wants from us to serve, so we need to take everything. So Paro, at this time, his heart is hardened by Hashem, and he says to him, leave me alone, don't see my face. Don't be careful, on the day you see my face, you will die. Moshe Rabbeinu responds by saying, Cain, I will not see your face anymore. Then we hear about the beginning of the next parak, which is the end of our Aliyah, where Hashem tells Moshe that there's going to be one more plague that he's going to bring against Pharaoh. And after this, the nation of Egypt and Pharaoh will send out a Goreshechem. They're going to chase you out of Egypt, at which point you're going to ask everybody to borrow from their neighbors to get all the coal, gold, and silver from the Egyptians as well. And we're going to hear that Moshe Rabbeinu is very favored in the eyes of all of the Avdei Pharaoh and the eyes of the people. So it's a little complex Aliyah. I just wanted two questions. Number one is why is Pharaoh intent upon keeping the livestock? Why is he just hanging on to all this negotiation? So the Oznaim Notara points out that when he saw 3 days of paralyzing darkness, but yet the nation of Israel did not flee, he believed that, in fact, that maybe they were weak. They weren't as they were showing, and therefore perhaps they would really be believed to come back after 3 days like they were requesting. But he said, but the problem is that if they go for this whole festival and they're going to bring all these sacrifices, you never know what's going to happen. They start to get ideas of nationalism and freedom and liberty and all this kind of nonsense in their heads. So he says, I will keep the animals so it's not going to be such a fantastic feast and you now have a collateral to come back for as well. It's his level of guarantee. Now, the curious pasuk in our Aliyah is when Pharaoh says, if you see my face again, you'll die, and Moshe Rabbeinu agrees to those terms, but then Right after that, we hear about Moshe Rabbeinu being told to talk about this next plague. So the Mefarshim debate this. Rashi really points out this is not in chronological sequence. Rav Hirsch paints it out very clearly, and perhaps we aren't used to thinking about it this way, but it is worthwhile noting that the order in which things happened was that the month of Nisan was designated as the first of month. So that happened first. Then the Korban Pesach and instructions are given for the 15th of the month, the 10th to the 14th to 15th of the month. Then the plague of darkness ensues and wanes towards the 13th of Nisan, at which point in time this negotiation here in our Aliyah happens. And then at that point in time, when a Paro sends them out and says, I won't see your face, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu has already told him about this Makas Bachoros, this whole episode of the firstborns as well. So you really need to see it in that way. So there's a lot of things going on all at once, and the timeline is a little less linear than would appear to be in the Pesukim. Being as this is a short Aliyah, perhaps it's an opportunity to look at and reflect on the patterns in the Makos themselves, how many plagues there were. So there are different ways of looking at them. We already looked at one breakdown of the Makos, and that's the 7-3 breakdown between Va'era and Bo, and the ideas that we explored in the first Aliyah as to why the breakdown of the plagues is. There are other things to consider when looking at the patterns of the plagues. So, first thing is the Gvuras Hashem. That's the Maharal's Sefer on Yetzias Mitzrayim, on the Haggadah as well. He describes in the 57th chapter that if you notice, the plagues are always moving upwards. They're not just an actual, we'll call it quantity. They're not just a scalar, they're a vector, they're moving upwards. So they start in the waters, and they move out of the waters onto the earth, and then they move up to the livestock and the humans, and then they move up to the air and above the clouds. So that's the movement of the plague. So there's a plague, and it's the experience of showing total control of every vestige of power in this world, from the lowest to the highest. That's what's being described over here as well. The Maharal then goes on to say perhaps another pattern over here, and that is that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that the world is created in 10 utterances, but then the Mishnah also describes that there are 10 times the 10 plagues that were ensuing in Egypt. Says the Maharal, that's not just because the number 10 happens to be an important base in the logarithmic scale. The reason why is because these are actually reflecting each other. So that means to say that when Hashem created the world, before He created the world, there was essentially only the infinite Ribbono Shel Olam. There's only the Almighty. Every time He created the world and another step was taken, He was essentially veiling and shielding His expression in this world. So every mamar, every utterance of creation was another veil hiding His presence, which meant that at a certain point when humanity was just so ignorant, willfully ignorant of seeing the presence of God, Hashem had to remove those veils once in history, and He removed them one by one, which meant that if, as an example, the Maharal goes to great depth to describe, you know, so when you have Yehi Choshech, let there be darkness, that's obviously the reflection of Yehi Or, of the second Maamar of light. When it talks about, you know, Arbe, that it's the locusts which eat all the vegetation, that undoes the creation of Tachia or its Deshe, the creation of vegetation. The Maharal points out that it doesn't work in the same sequence as the Maamare Bereshis, as the utterances of creation, for the simple reason that in creation, creation unfolds sequentially, and over here the makos are unfolding in the direction of going upwards, which is why it shifts the direction. That means to say that then we got to the makos bochoros, which we're just fascinating how this all works. Essentially, every layer of creation has essentially been removed, so there's no way of hiding from the reality and the presence of Hashem in this world, which is another pattern. That's pattern number two. Pattern number three is the moral threshold. Rashi says if you look at the plagues, they divide into five and five. Why is that? Because it's true that Paro is stubborn and Paro won't listen and Paro ignores all the entreaties and all the power displayed in the Makos, but that's only true up till the end of the fifth plague. There onwards, once we move from 6 to 10, you'll notice that it's Hashem who's hardening His heart, because at that point in time, He doesn't have the fortitude to be able to stand up to it, even though perhaps he wants to be corrupt, he wants to deny Hashem His presence, but he's been beaten down so severely that he needs Hashem to be mechazek him, to strengthen his heart, which at a certain point a person's free will is taken away, as Rashi explains, and that happens between plague 5 and 6. So it's 5 and 5 is another pattern to look at as well. Most famously, we should know the pattern which appears in the Haggadah, which is the fourth pattern, which is called Detzach Adash Ba'achav, which in fact is an acronym for the plagues as well that occur. What is interesting about them is that not only is, so that's an acronym, Dam Tzadera Kinim is Tetzach, Arov Devashchin is Adash, and Borod Arbe Choshech Makos Bechoros, or Bechoros is the last one, is the last four. What is interesting about this is it's not simply just games. There's lots of interesting things to be found in these patterns, which are very meaningful. So as an example, you'll notice that the third of each of the sets does not have a warning. So yes, there's a warning given to Pharaoh before the plague of blood and frogs, but there is no warning in lice. And the same thing happens in the second set of three, and the same thing happens in the last set of 3-4, that there is no warning for the last of the plagues as well. And there are lots of other parallels as well. When the staff of Aaron is used, when the hand is used, how the plagues are conducted, they all fit into very neat groups in terms of seeing the pattern over here as well. So what's the relevance of this? So Rav Hirsch has a very beautiful suggestion over here. He has an essay on the parasha. It's quoted in his Agada as well, this section from the parasha, where he describes that there were three things that Egypt were doing to the Hebrews. Number one was a gerus. They were treating them as foreigners. Avdus, they were subjugating them, and Inui, they were afflicting them. These are all reflected back in the prophecy of the Bris Ben Avasara, in the covenant between the parts. Your children will be foreigners, they'll be subjugated, and they will be afflicted. So Egypt is performing all three of these. So argues Rav Hirsch that each of these three, these sets of three, Tetzach, Adash, and Ba'achav, in fact, are microcosms of the reflection of the punishment upon Egypt. So the first of each of the three, the second of each of the three, and the third of each of the three reflect a punishment befitting each of these three degrees of pain inflicted upon the nation of Israel. So for instance, blood that while animals in Barod are a expression of Geirus, where the Egyptians become foreigners upon their own land. They relied upon the Nile as their source of life and economy. It's no longer there is anymore. It creates decay and death. They thought that they had their cities, which were their place, and they could have a domain outside of the wild, but the wild now comes into the city. That's Arav. And Barod is where they had climate. They relied on climate. After those three plagues, the first in each of those three sets, they say to themselves, is this the land we really know? Are we really the masters over this? That's number one. And then the second is avdus, so servitude. Servitude is based on a misnomer, on a idea of superiority, that I control you, I am more powerful, I'm superior to you. And so therefore things like Tzfardea and Arabia, where small creatures which you think you have dominion on can be excessively dangerous and don't know the boundaries anymore of where they belong. So that means to say that you now are no longer so sophisticated and so powerful as you thought you were. Dever, the pestilence is killing their livestock, which ultimately was their prize assets, their economy, which made them the most powerful nation in North Africa and the known world as well. All that's been taken away, so your idea of superiority is being questioned, and therefore, how can you be masters if you don't have any superiority in the first place? And finally, it's worthwhile noting that kinim shchin and choshech, the lice, the boils, and the darkness are all plagues of immense physical suffering. Right? When people are afflicted by lice, and when there's boils upon their skin, a skin disease, and the incarceration in darkness are all expressions of terrible suffering. So each of the thirds in each of the group reflect that as well. Very, very painful description, and this is reflected about the idea of the idea which is that they actually did to the nation of Israel. It's worthwhile just noting as a fascinating aside that Ditzach Adash Ba'achav actually is also came into a debate between Christian and Jewish polemics. The Christians for many centuries had blood libels in which they preposterous claims were that Jews were taking the blood of Christian children to put into the wafers of the matzah. Jews are not allowed to drink blood, forget killing people. It's the whole thing is ridiculous. And so one of the priests actually claimed that Ditzach Adash Ba'achav was the acronym for Dam Tzrichim Kulanu, we all need blood, Al Davar She'aragnu, because we killed Ben Kel Chai Arvashamayim, the God of our power and God in heaven. So they claimed that Ditzach Adash Ba'achav was in fact an acronym about needing blood. And so the one of the rabbonim who was representing the Jewish community said that actually, in fact, it's another acronym, which is Dovrim Tzorenu Kazov, our enemies speak falsehood, Alilos Dam Sheker, which are falsehoods of blood, B'nei Avraham Chalila Bazois, the children of Abraham, God forbid doing such a thing. It's just interesting to a historical twist on this, but that's another aspect of the Ditzach Adash Va'achav. With this, we close the third Aliyah and an overview of the Makos. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.